Hi, I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination on the No Direction Network.
All right, we're back for episode 39 of Digital Divination. You know, I was just thinking that it's 26 is like 1 year, which means 13 more is like a half year. So we've been doing this for a year and a half now.
That is amazing.
Yeah, you know, it's like, and we haven't missed an episode.
Yeah, knock on wood. Do I have wood? I do. Okay, knock on wood.
Yeah, and, you know, and we haven't been shut down, so.
Yeah, it's actually, we haven't heard the, you know, hey guys, no, it turns out your listenership is zero, so quit doing it.
Well, you know, actually, I've had several people kind of mention things, ask me about stuff that we've talked about, both in Intrepid Heroes, somebody's last asking, I was having problems with something. And they say, oh, yeah, that wasn't one of the macros I did, was it? So it was Russell Sinclair, who's been doing some stuff for us.
Okay, yeah.
And then somebody also mentioned something we talked about in Digital Divination. So there's at least two people that are listening to us.
That's, yeah, two more than I might have expected.
Yeah, well, your wife is starting to listen to this show.
That's what she claims, yeah.
Well, she was asking, should she start now or start at the beginning or where should she start? And I didn't really have a good answer because we're not real linear with what we do, you know?
That's true. We don't have like a through line.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm curious to see what she thinks of it because I really respect, you know, her thoughts on things and she knows both of us. So I'm wondering, you know, I have a lot of fun doing this and I'm wondering if there's actually some benefit to folks as well. So I think she'll give us the honest truth.
I think that's true. And if, in fact, 39 is our last episode, it's because we were, she yeah. listened and we were told, hey, guys, yeah, cut it out.
Yeah, no more late night discussions for you guys. That's it. You're done. Oh, man. So, Ron, how's your week been?
Oh, my goodness. This has been quite the week. Quite an exhausting week at Paizo. We've had, as anybody watching the gaming news has seen, a number of allegations, both from the past and very recently, allegations of impropriety, of potential discrimination, other actions that have been really kind of rocking the entire company as those of us who aren't up in the executive level wait to see what kind of response we get from the executives. The timing was about as poor as it possibly could be because most of the executives had already left to go to Gen Con. So even in a pandemic world where we're all remote, it might have still been possible to sort of have a frank internal discussion about some of these things. But when they're away meeting, you know, in Gen Con with people who frankly are setting, you know, the you know, distributor orders and things that really the company relies on to be able to keep the lights on and the doors open. And then they've got to deal with an issue that is creating such controversy back here that it's, you know, questioning whether to keep, you know, we're going to be able to keep the lights on and the doors open. It was just about the worst possible timing. And I think that there have been two things that I've seen come out of this last week. It's personally very inspiring to me that there have been a number of people, freelancers primarily, but people of gamers of all sorts, who have recognized that the allegations that have been thrown around focus on the upper echelons of the company and the people who are sort of in the trenches day to day getting things done, the developers, the customer service staff, the warehouse, are, you know, hardworking, dedicated people who are really championing the inclusion, the diversity of the company. We're promoting that among our freelancers and in our products. And that we're doing, you know, a lot of hard work there. And people have been sort of coming from a lot of different directions to say, you know, hey, Ron, thank you. Thank you for what you've done. That is exceptionally heartwarming for me to hear. At the same time, these a lot of these very same people are saying to the executives, you know, that said, we need some change and we need some accountability. Mm-hmm. And I can't say that they're wrong in asking for that. Mm-hmm. Frankly, I would have to say that I really wish as things sort of you know, will settle out or come to light and changes are made. I suppose I want to make sure that I'm giving some compassion to the people at the upper levels at Paizo, kind of the same way that I would want compassion. But I think it's right to insist on accountability the same way I would want to insist that I would want other people to insist on accountability for myself based on my actions. That's got to happen. And a lot of us in the company are eager for that.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the timing of this, you know, Gen Con having been pushed back and now being this week being a really busy time for a lot of people in the company because all of you were doing panels and, you know, lots going on. And at the same time, having to deal with this brewing firestorm that really, I think it started up over late last week and then kind of started to hit its peak early this week. Is that correct? Yep.
Yeah, that's right. It started with the very sudden departure of two of our customer service people. And when when word got out about how they had left so suddenly on such bad terms, one person, both of them had been very beloved by a lot of the fans, and one of them had been terminated quite suddenly, and the other one quit in protest of that termination. It sort of invited people, more than one person, to sort of open up about some of the wrongs that they had seen as well in the company and ways they'd been mistreated by the company, in some cases many years ago, but in ways that had never been really adequately addressed by the company. And so even though some of it is dredging up a lot of old things, I really hesitate when people say, oh, this, you know, this happened so long ago from disgruntled employees. I'm like, what? But if it's never been addressed, there's never been any accountability, it's not too late. It's timely to be discussing accountability for these actions. So,
yeah, I was quite frankly surprised to hear of letting go somebody from customer service, given how busy all the customer service people are now, because they're not in the office. They, you know, aren't able to answer phones. You know, they're being inundated with emails and things. And it's just, you know, back before the pandemic, if I had an issue, I could call on the phone and I pretty much instantly got a response from somebody that would take care of the problem. It was awesome.
Yeah, I've heard from more people than I can count that we have the best customer service in the industry, right? That Paizo is going to be responsive. They're going to take care of you. They care about your problem. And that's, frankly, it's one of the reasons it's so great to work for this company. And the thought that might not be the case anymore, you know, really, I mean, it hurts. That's something I'm proud that we are. And I would want us to continue to be that.
Now, you were on some panels over the weekend. Did this question come up to any of your panels?
No, we had, a couple of panels that were specifically where I guess this did come up. And one of the things that we did, let me back up. I did two panels. One of them was basically about adventure paths, and that went just like any other panel would. The other one was about engaging a diverse slate of freelancers. And our moderator, James Case, sort of opened the panel by saying, look, this is a particularly difficult conversation for us to be having, because considering the allegations of discrimination against a diverse set of employees or even, you know, volunteers or freelancers, is it even appropriate for us to be talking about how to engage diverse voices in our freelancing? And we decided that the answer was yes. And this is actually a discussion that all of us on the panel had had ahead of time. We decided that, yes, it was absolutely worth having the panel because silence wouldn't stand, right? Silence doesn't answer anything on this issue. And so we wanted to go ahead and talk about what we had done, what we'd seen, advice that we had. Really what we did is we wanted to lean right into what people had been saying. It's like, look, the folks on the ground who are doing the hiring, doing the editing, doing the developing, really are really dedicated to diversity and inclusion in the setting and among the freelancers. And we are, and we wanted to be able to talk about that and show that. So it was important for us that the panel proceed. And then once it did, it was actually a whole lot of great questions, a lot of good issues that had come up. It was actually a really satisfying panel.
Good. Yeah. I was just kind of curious how that was going to happen given the timing. And you know, I've seen some comments online. People were concerned that some of the panel discussion would be completely overwhelmed by it. It's clearly a hot topic now, both, you know, nationally and for your company. And I'm kind of waiting to see what the response is going to be from the folks in management. I think there's been a brief response from Jeff,
right? And the CEO and I think, of the company. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of the individuals have made a little bit more detailed responses, but really it seems like there's not a big call to action. This is what we're doing going forward yet. And that kind of makes sense given the timing that nobody's really had a chance to take a hard look at things. I'm going to guess, and make a plan for going forward that's actually going to work.
Right, right. And even once they do, there are plenty of people, myself included, for whom it will kind of hardly matter what Paizo says. We're going to be watching what Paizo does. Right. Actions are going to be really needed here. Words are just not going to cut it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really bummed about the folks that are gone, though. That's very disappointing.
That's absolutely the case for me as well. It's interesting because one of the things that's important to me is interacting well with our customers. And our former head of customer service, Sarah Marie, had obviously a lot of information about that. She was very dedicated. And she and I had started to have some initial professional discussions about, you know, interacting with customers and best use of our forums and things like that. I feel like those are moving in a very fruitful direction, and I'm really disappointed that now those discussions are, you know, who knows if I'll ever be able to sort of bring them up again. But it doesn't mean that sort of the customer experience is any less in my eyes personally. I'm one of those people who's always kind of pushing at the edges and corners to try to see how we can do things better, whether or not it's directly in my wheelhouse. I'm going to keep pestering. So how was your week?
It was my first week back teaching face-to-face.
Ooh.
And I got to tell you, I forget how much fun it is to see all the students again. I was, you know, I have two classes, and they're just a great bunch of students.
Really?
Yeah,
And every one of them was back in person as well, right?
Yeah, everyone was back in person. Oof. We're all wearing masks. And that's something I wasn't sure how that was going to go. And I, you know, we keep our distance. And, you know, for me, it's easy because nobody wants to sit in the front row anyway. And I was concerned if I could project well enough to get to all corners of the room. And I, you know, kind of checked on that. Have a couple of students that are still a little quiet with their masks, but yeah, I think that's okay. Everybody's required to be vaccinated. So that's it seems like I feel comfortable with it. You know, there are certain circumstances where I'm uncomfortable in groups of people in a room for an extended period. But here where I'm confident that people are vaccinated and we're all wearing masks, we're all being socially distanced. You know, my transplant team said it was fine. I'm not worried about it.
Good.
But it was fun. I also forget how exhausting it is early on when I'm getting up to speed, you know, and I have this little fitness tracker. I have a watcher that kind of tracks my movement, and I walk between a mile and 2 miles each class period walking around the room.
Oh, my goodness. You're one of those kind of teachers, a very active kind.
Yeah. So, well, you know, because I'd like to have, you know, I do some lecturing and actually record it so that people can see it. And then I break the students into individual groups to work on things. And so I got to go around the room and check on things. And it's like, wow, you know, this is actually physical work again compared to sitting on my butt in front of the computer for 2 hours teaching a class.
All right. Well, it's going to be good for you then. There's your daily exercise is actually teaching your classes.
Yeah. I was liking that. And then, of course, you know, Gen Con was here and I was teaching during Eric Mona's keynote speech. So I missed that, but I got to go back and see it, you know, the recorded version. It was like all over like Facebook and YouTube and stuff. So it was easy to
find. That was great to see. And one of the things that we emphasized a lot prior to this keynote was come listen to Eric Mona's pre-recorded keynote. This was already recorded, you know, the implication meaning he's not going to be saying anything about the events of the week. Because I remember when he told us all, he's like, I'm out. You won't be able to get hold of me this afternoon. I'm going to be recording my Gen Con keynote, trying to arrange the last bits of the art orders, et cetera. And you know, that was something that he had already done before Gen Con. So, but I went and watched it too. It was actually really neat because it was announcing several things I've been working on that have been kind of my heart and soul for the work for the last several months. And so it's good that those are out and I can talk about them.
Yeah, there were some surprises in there, both on the Pathfinder and especially for us, the Starfinder side. They announced Drift Crisis.
Yes, I think this is a great idea. This harkens back to the great comic book arcs, right? Secret Wars and things like that, where all kinds of different product lines all tie into the same story. The idea was, let's do something like that that's going to be sort of truly sort of shaking everything up. And it's called the Drift Crisis. The Drift, the hyperspace crashes, right? Like a system crashing and needing to be rebooted. And when it reboots, things are not the same. And what had once been safe travel lanes are no longer. And there's sort of the races on to find out where the new shortcuts are. And this is exciting, not only because we get a hardcover book with some, you know, frankly, some very, you know, talented and handsome and modest authors, John.
Yes, you are so correct.
To talk about what the Drift Crash is and the Drift Crisis and what that might entail. But then there's also going to be this three-part Drift Crashers adventure path. There's going to be organized play tie-ins to this. So this is really going to be something that sort of grips everybody across the all the Starfinder product lines.
Yeah, I heard there was a panel about it too. Do you know anything about that?
Yes, we had. This was a little bit unusual. We had previously held the Pathfinder Adventure Path and Starfinder Adventure Path panels separately, and I think this is the first time. I think it's the first time I've been on one where we had one panel where we sort of mushed both of them together, like real quick, talk about all the Pathfinder Adventure Path stuff and all the Starfinder Adventure Path stuff. Go. And it was really neat to be able to not only be able to talk about what we have going on the Pathfinder side, but to hear what's going on the Starfinder side. And Jason Keeley talked a little bit about the Horizons of the Vast and how that's going. And then the next volume of that, number two volume, is about to come out and how exciting that is. If you go back and hear it, he sort of spoils everything about what's going on in the Horizons of the Vast adventure path. You know, I feel like my adventure number one of Horizons of the Vast, Planetfall, is all about like carefully setting up a mystery, right? Mm-hmm. Here's this brand new unpopulated planet that's rich in resources, and what could possibly be going on here? What happened to the people that were plainly once here? And he just says in the goes into kind of a lot of detail. But it actually made me really excited for the back half of the Horizons of the Vast Adventure Path, which I'd read in the outline, but hadn't put a whole lot of really sort of thought or analysis into. But that was neat to see. And then he talked about the Drift Crashers Adventure Path, which is the 3-part adventure path. I'm writing the third one. He was quick to point out that when the drift crash happens, some people end up getting kind of thrown in who knows where. It's a huge planar anomaly. And the first thing that starts out in this adventure path, you're fighting some pirates in space in your spaceship, and then you get dumped into hell. So, hey, everybody, your first level characters, and here you are in hell, and you have to figure out what the heck is even going on and how you're going to get out of there. So it's, I mean, and that's just the first part of the first adventure. And you go to some really crazy places, and it's just so much alternate timelines and just all kinds of stuff like that. My adventure, number three, which sort of provides all the solutions to wrap everything up, is called Masters of Time and Space. And it is, I have to say, Jake Tondreau, who's developing this AP, he gave me a real, kind of a real love letter to the old school dungeon exploration. This is like a kind of a space 4-dimensional dungeon exploration adventure. And I am having a ton of fun with it. I'm just about done with the writing and ready to turn it over. But it has been a really big blast to write. I do have to say, it's not entirely all dungeon, because there is some Starship stuff in it without going into a lot of detail. But in doing so, I had to pick up and do a much more thorough review of the Starship Operations Manual than I have had to before now. I'd kind of just thumbed through it before. Which part of these did you write?
I wrote some of the starships in there, and also some of the manufacturers.
I see.
None of the really cool rules that you're probably using.
No, but I was looking through some of the manufacturers, and I'm looking at some of the ships, because I'm building a ship, and I'm like, oh, well, some of these are done. There's very clear themes to the ships that are built and the manufacturers that has just never been really pulled together until this book, and I'm just really impressed with it all. And so I thought, I'm sure something in here that's impressing me was what John did.
Well, maybe we can talk a little bit more about that. I don't want to get too much detail of what you're working on. So
So. Fair enough.
But yeah, you know, so that's really interesting. I haven't seen that keynote yet. I was busy actually. GMing. I was scheduled to GM the special on Saturday. Spent all this time. I lost power. I was out at Camino. I lost power when we got there Friday night.
Oh no!
Yes, I was getting. But you know, I have my battery backup for the fridge and everything. So that worked for a while. But it was really hard to do any prep work on the computer where I needed to, you know, have the internet and do stuff. So it came on late that night. I spent all the morning prepping, and then I had a no-show for the game, and then somebody else had leveled out of the tier, so I ended up not running it. I had to find tables for my two folks, but then I got to play. And I've never played a special when it first comes out. I always GM it. So it was great, you know, to be able to do that.
And kind of play with ignorance, right? Because you're ready to run it, but...
I know. But I played a different tier, you know, than I prepped.
Okay, all right.
So that was nice. And then today, I ran another game. And, you know, I spent some time in the morning finishing my preps, and it went long. It went about 5 hours, you know, which is kind of the full time period. But it was a lot of fun. I had this really fun group. It was actually like two brothers and then a husband and wife and then one of their friends in this group. And so it was like, you know, just a lot of fun, a lot of banter. It was probably the closest you could get to being like in person with people you know for them but in an online environment.
Oh, how fun. How fun.
Yeah.
Was it all the fun role-playing that took it to be 5 yes. hours? So,
it was, okay. It was a lot of, well, a lot of role-playing and a lot of poor rolling. So, yeah, they couldn't take anything down. It normally would take a couple rounds, took like 6, and they had a lot of buffs and debuffs and not a lot of main damage. So, okay. They were able to survive fine. They just couldn't kill anything quickly, you know?
So. Well, that's when you said that your game went to 5 hours. I'm like, is this the John Godek I know, who's always really sort of snappy and prepared? And people, anytime somebody's, oh, this scenario runs really long, you're always, I ran it in 3 hours. It was great.
Should have been 3.5. And I told them, yeah, this, this is going long because we're having a lot of fun. I hope you guys don't mind. And, the poor Roland, they didn't care.
Oh,
they didn't care. God. Yeah. So that was good. That was good. So other things that came out this week, I think it was this week, maybe it was late last week, Tech Revolution, I think officially released. Is that right?
Yeah, that's out, and it had been delayed because of shipping, but I think people now have it in their hands.
Yeah, I just got my PDF last week. I was kind of looking at it pretty quick because that's one book I didn't get involved in the writing of, and I'm actually really excited. There's stuff in there that we kind of expected. There's all the mechs. There's the Nanosite, the final version, which is kind of neat. And then there's a whole lot of character options, new equipment, vehicle options and stuff. So I'm actually really excited to hopefully get some time this week to really sit down with it and see what's new,
Oh, this kind of, yeah, my I wrote for that, but my writing was very sort of small and focused. I did the Tech Relics, which was a ton of fun. Yeah, in fact, I think I asked you to kind of run your eyes over some of them for me to make sure they were kind of balanced. Yeah, so you'll be able to see the final product based on, having gone through the ringer of your feedback to me and my rewriting, and then it gets developed and then it goes to edit, and then you'll be able to see like 3 steps removed from what you'd said about it. But that was really neat because I didn't have to pay as much attention to sort of general, I guess I'd say item balancing. It was sort of game rules balancing, right? Does this weird thing give abilities you would expect at, level 5 or level 15 or whatever? Right. And that was a lot of fun. Quite freeing in my design there. And that was fun.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that with balance. I actually just finished a set of stuff for a deliverable for a third-party publisher, Evil Robot Games. Mm-hmm. And, one of the things I was concerned about is, I told Paul, the founder and person that runs the company, that I balanced them just like I would anything I wrote, for Paizo, really pretty tight on the rules and things, and I was worried because I haven't done a lot of third party stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And I said, I don't know if you wanted these to be like really overpowered and cool and everything, but I tried to keep a pretty strict balance, and it was nice. He came back to me and said, no, we really try to keep the power range exactly the same as what you would get from a Paizo product. And so that balancing, it seems to be a pretty critical thing. So you don't get, one-shot wonder type of things, for players.
Yeah. I think a lot of people realize that the entire longevity of the game suffers when it's an arms race and every product is obsoleting the one before, because everything's just, there's a real power creep. And again and again. So I'm glad to hear that even the third-party publishers have sort of embraced that thinking of we want to sustain the game just like Paizo does. That's good to hear.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that was kind of fun. I finished that up. You talk about the timing for this thing that happened at Paizo. Mm-hmm. I was working on a couple of deliverables, one for Paizo and one for Evil Robot Games, and knocking them out. So I was busy all of last week because they were all like, kind of due on Monday. I didn't even see a lot of stuff. And, after that, I finished them up. And then Tuesday I said, I got some time. I'm going to shoot all my developers an email saying, hey, I got some availability now. And after that, then I realized that, oh, all this whole firestorm was going on. Paizo. I'm thinking, oh, this is really bad. Not only do they have Gen Con that they got to worry about, they got to worry about this. My little email is, this is the worst timing because this is something they don't want to think about. And it also looks like I'm ignoring it that, oh, yeah, I don't care what's going on. When I sent that, I really didn't know what was going on because I wasn't paying attention. And it was afterwards I said, oh, wow. I'd seen some people allude to some things. And then I saw what it was. And it's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. Well, I do have to say, you're not the only one. As much as this is a real inflection point, a real definitional moment for Paizo, and in some ways that touch on the entire industry, a really important time. You know, this isn't most people's full-time life or even part-time life. It's just kind of a fun thing they do to, you know, write for us on the weekends or whatever. So there are plenty of people who've sent me either just status emails for what they're writing or the turnovers that were due or what have you, just because they're kind of going about their normal business. And the first time I got one of those, I'm like, are you not seeing what we're living? And then I had to take a step back from my own ego for a minute and say, well, no, for a lot of people, writing is something that is kind of thrilling to them and they buckle down and do it. And the rest of their time is their own day jobs, their own families, their own lives. And even if they heard something was going on with Paizo, that takes some mental bandwidth. And they're like, yeah, I can see them not wanting to do anything more than, you know, keep their head down, finish their product and go on to whatever the next thing is. That's fair. Those of us that are sort of in it on a day-to-day basis, really, it has taken up a lot of energy and time, and it's been sort of startlingly exhausting, but there's a little bit of hope there too, that things will be addressed.
Yeah, I am hoping so. I like the company. I don't want it to go away anytime soon, you know.
Yeah, me either. hey, but did you also hear about this Starfinder Infinite that we're doing?
Yes. I just saw that as well. Like, was that announced Wednesday, I think? Or
That was as part of Eric Mona's keynote.
Oh, it was Thursday then. Okay.
Yeah, it was on Thursday. Yeah. And it's actually a little while before it launches. It's going to launch on October 13th. Mm-hmm. But the idea is, You may have had in the past, everybody has had the ability to publish under the Open Gaming License.
Right.
And you just can't publish things that use Paizo's intellectual property. You can't use their art, can't use their names of stuff. In fact, the inside cover even sort of holds back certain product identity terms. You couldn't say Drift, you have to say Hyperspace. Mm-hmm. You can't use the word Skyfire as part of the Skyfire mandate on Triaxis, et cetera. There are certain terms that we've got reserved. But the Starfinder Infinite is an opportunity for you to write stuff in our world and use art that we've given you and resources to make your products, you know, have at least initial look, I guess you might say, like our products, the kind of stat block format that we're used to, that players who read our products are used to seeing and so on. And really, we're kind of opening up our galaxy for everybody else to play in and make up their own things.
Yeah, that's a lot like what Wizards does with their DM Guild, isn't it?
It is. It's like there are actually quite a few companies. Frankly, maybe we're a little bit late to the party on this because Wizards of the Coast has DM's Guild. I know that Savage Worlds has something like this. World Darkness, I think, does. I know Ulysses Spiel does for their games. Places where you're allowed to participate sort of in a fan-made way using their rules and in a lot of cases their world, but in a way you can be recompensed for, in a way that the previous licenses did not permit.
Now, I think there's some limitations. I just looked at it pretty quickly. I think the Starfinder Infinite limits you to just the core book and the pack worlds. Is that correct?
That is the, I think for some of the art, those are the only art resources that we're giving you. But as far as the world itself, I didn't think there was I think the limits are more on types of content, right? You can't have, you know, we want you to be sticking basically to our PG-13. You can't have anything that's inappropriate, but once you set stuff within our world, it's kind of easy to set things in the vast. There's just so much out there that it's easy enough to have.
Yeah.
But if you want to have an adventure where the villains are the Aslanti Star Empire and you go through a chase through the diaspora and you meet the embodiment of the deity Triune and things like that, all that you can put in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was pretty excited. I mentioned that when I saw you the other day, that this looks pretty cool. As a third party publisher, what is your take on that? Is this something worth doing for you?
I think is the answer. And the reason I see it as a third party publisher as something that's really interesting to do is, first, I feel like I can target a more focused audience than general OGL printing would let me do on DM's Guild or things like that. And secondly, the ability to tie it to the campaign setting is very enticing. And I can give you a fairly specific example. I've had an adventure path sort of framed out. I don't know how many words I've got for it, 20,000 or so, as kind of framing out this first through 20th level Starfinder adventure path. And it's just, I've just never found the time to be able to pull it together, even to start on like an initial adventure at level one to kind of kick it off. Mm-hmm. Because I really want it to be accessible to players of Starfinder, but I couldn't set it in the Pact Worlds. Mm-hmm. And I thought to myself, and I might have even, you know, mentioned before, well, I can make it, you know, this is Venus instead of Castrovel, mm-hmm. and this is Mars instead of Akaton. Well, now I can actually make it Castrovel and Akaton and all the things that people want to have. And Abadar Corp can be the corporation behind some of the machinations and so on. I mean, I can do all the things that really tie it to the world. Is this a thing that's going to get me excited enough to have it done by launch date of October 13th? Nah, I don't know. I got a lot going on between now and then.
Yeah.
But absolutely, it's more of an incentive for me to dig in and work on it than I think I've ever had before.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if I am recalling correctly, it's a 50-50 split.
It is. Well, it's 50. It's 50% to the author. The creator gets 50%.
Right.
And then the other 50 is split between Paizo and DriveThruRPG.
Right, right, right. And I think if you publish just as a third-party publisher through DriveThruRPG, they take 35?
Yes, you get 65%. So you get less. You're giving up 15%. Mm-hmm. But what you're getting instead is the ability to set it within our world, the ability to use a lot of the art assets and kind of, mm-hmm. you know, layout tools help that we give. Mm-hmm. And frankly, you're giving it to people who are looking specifically for the Starfinder Infinite content, right? You've got a sort of a narrower audience, mm-hmm. and that can make marketing easier. Now, there is a restriction on it. The restriction is once you've published it in Starfinder Infinite, that's kind of where it lives. You can't have multiple versions of it.
Right.
But I think that's actually more of a restriction on the Pathfinder side. If you're a third-party publisher who might want to do, well, let me do a Pathfinder version of this and then a fifth edition version of it, you can't duplicate it like that on Pathfinder Infinite. But Starfinder Infinite, there's kind of only the one game in town as far as the science fantasy that Starfinder does. And so I think that's less of a limitation there. It's easier to do there.
Yeah, no, I think it's awesome. I was very excited when I saw it because I've been working for a lot of different projects and I have a lot of different ideas. And quite frankly, it seems pretty simple for me to put some ideas together and get them on paper. And it's like, you know, I could do a lot of little things here, which I see, you know, some of the third-party developers do. Just when they come up, I could write something up, you know, a lot of player options and things, and just set it out there and see how it goes. And if there's interest and it keeps working, I can build on it, and I could do it at the pace I want to do rather than working on anybody else's deadline.
Absolutely correct. Yep. And if you've got kind of a fun idea for something, right, you're like, oh, we're just playing through Dawn of Flame, you know what my, I expected the adventure to go left and it went right, but maybe I'll put together just a short five encounter adventure that's like, oh, well, and you know, this part of Asana Town, maybe here's a mini adventure you can drop in.
Now you did mention a couple things, and I haven't looked at what comes with Starfinder Infinite. I don't even know if they've said that, quite frankly, but you've alluded to something, so I'm going to ping on you, and I can edit this out later if we need. So do they actually give you the stat block tools and the layout tools to make it look like the Paizo formatting?
Yeah, it depends on what you mean by look like. You can't actually mimic our trade dress, which is kind of a legalistic way of saying you can't look exactly like Starfinder does. But with the stuff that you get there, you can download a couple of, in addition to downloading the art, one of the things that you can download is a Word document that has a whole bunch of the specifics in there as far as here's what the fonts you would use, here's sort of the appearance. I actually just downloaded this recently. There's three things like this. There's a kind of a here's what a Word template to have your Pathfinder first edition stuff look like. Here's one for your Pathfinder second edition stuff to look like. And then here's one that Starfinder would look like. And so it's got free versions. The fonts that Paizo uses aren't, for the most part, free fonts. We pay for those. But there are plenty of fonts that are sort of close enough in appearance that you'd be able to use them. And we tell you what those fonts are and put them all in a document with the right logo. Here's how we would lay out the chapter heading. And here's the sidebar heading. Here's what our tables look like. And they're kind of the, you know, that same blue color that things are for the rule books. So even though it's on a Word document, what they've wanted to do, and I had some sort of internal conversations like this, they say, we want to make it approachable for anybody who, if somebody's like, look, I don't know the first thing about InDesign, and that's kind of an expensive program anyway. Right. And no, we want you to be able to put your stuff to look, you know, at least the way people expect Starfinder stuff to, you know, to at least look like generally, and then get it out there, do it, see how it does, see how people respond to it.
Yeah, no, you know, I'm actually looking at DriveThruRPG, and they have a Starfinder Infinite creator resource, an adventure template is what I found.
Yep.
I'm presuming they have other templates, or is this the main one?
Adventure template might be misnamed, because it actually has, like, here's how you do an alien archive kind of entry in there.
Right.
You'll see, if you open it up, you'll see it's got, here's kind of what our general chapters look like. Here's what an alien archive looks like. There's no borders, right? You could put on borders yourself if you'd like. But this is, if you've had a text document somewhere of a bunch of feats, let's say, and you'd be like, I don't even know how to make this blue. I don't even know how to make it look like the stats, the feat blocks that Paizo uses. Well, here's a way to make it look like what Paizo uses.
Yeah, so I noticed there's an alien monsters art pack, a planets art pack, ships art pack, environments art pack. Yeah, that sounds like I'm going to be doing some downloads here.
Yeah, it is a lot of good stuff. And I don't know, I hope it's not the end all be, you know, this is it. This is what we're going to download. I hope they kind of add to it, even though there's a lot here. I hope they keep, Paizo keeps adding to it. I actually honestly don't know what their plans are. But I think that the having the ability to create something and drop some art in to give it a little bit of a more visual flair is great. It's a really neat thing to do. And, you know, frankly, I think it's worth giving up the 15%. I feel like if I'm able to put something together, then I will almost certainly have high enough sales to justify the reduction in the percentage that I get. You know, I encourage everybody to take a look, decide for themselves. You know, there are a lot of different platforms out there that have various percentages, but there's a real opportunity here, and I encourage people to take a look at it.
So this is kind of a weird question. This might be a legal question. Can we mix the Pathfinder Infinite art with the Starfinder if we wanted?
I don't see any reason why not. It's a good question, and I've thought about that.
Yeah.
Because sometimes the kind of thing that I want to make in Pathfinder, like I want to make a new monster, it may be that one of the things in the Pathfinder or in the Starfinder alien art that they give you looks mm-hmm. just like or close enough to
right.
the Pathfinder monster that I want to make mm-hmm. to be able mm-hmm. to drop it in. I think that works. It's also monsters have been kind of hard for me to find. I've got a couple of different stock art options that I use. I've got a couple of different subscription services for sort of cheap art, but finding just the right kind of monster is sometimes really hard. Right. If it's something like a Medusa or a Hydra or kind of thing that's sort of drawn from legend, it's a little bit easier, but you know, the fact that we can get at some of these aliens has actually been really neat.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is exciting. I will have to, I wish it had happened earlier in the year, but you know, timing.
now you're back in school and yeah,
you know, I'm a little busier than I have, you know, I am during the summer, quite frankly, you know, so I'll be a little bit slower, you know, working on this stuff. Well,
all right. Well, you've got till the 13th if you want to be sort of, you know, right on the front. I mean, I don't need to tell you about the advantages of you know, first to market movement and things like
that.
So.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I think you're right, man. Just to knock out something early on to get the first mover advantage on it. I don't know. Yeah. So, all right. Well, this has been a busy, exciting week, and I think it's just going to get a little busier and more exciting as we go along.
I think so. I think we'll all be watching.
I'm John.
And I'm Ron, and this is Digital Divination.